Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Wednesday, June 12th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. A study to determine if Sitka is a good place to mine for gold will have to wait. The Sitka Assembly last night postponed action on a proposal to spend $72,000 on a geotechnical survey along Green Lake Road. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
The request to hold off on a decision actually came from the organization that had asked for the item to appear on the Assembly's agenda in the first place, the Sitka Economic Development Association, or SEDA.
We'd really like to have a full Assembly to be able to really hear this and kind of vet this process through, because it's going to be controversial, and we understand that.
That is Gary White, SEDA's executive director. At the table in front of him on Tuesday sat only five of the seven Assembly members. That's not that unusual in the summertime, but it is enough to mess with the margin of error. Passing anything in front of the Assembly requires four votes. White's organization had proposed hiring Avalon Development of Fairbanks to study an area along Green Lake Road for minerals. Doing so could tell local officials whether Sitka is a gold mine, quite literally. But the possibility of a mine, even if it was far off in the future, resulted in some public concern. And even with White's suggestion that the item be postponed, Mayor Mim McConnell allowed members of the public to continue testifying for or against the study.
Hello, I'm Larry Edwards, a longtime Sitka resident.
Edwards was one of five people to speak against spending money on the plan. He told the Assembly that it amounted to, quote, gambling with public funds.
And even if we were to win, so to speak, and if an exploitable deposit were found, I think we're probably better off just to leave well enough alone and not do it.
Resident Paul Norwood was another voice in opposition. He said the mining industry can pay its own way.
They don't need my tax money to go out and find gold in Silver Bay. They already have money. And if there's real interest there, they can go out and find it.
The Chamber of Commerce, meanwhile, came to the meeting with a resolution in support of the project. Chamber President Tarmica McConnell said her organization believes the project could eventually mean high-paying jobs for Sitka.
We have to remember there are a lot of struggling families in Sitka, even if they're one or two income families trying to make ends meet, and a potential economic driver like mining could help that.
Tarmica McConnell was one of three people to voice support for the project, the others being White with SEDA and Kenneth Cameron. He is president, CEO, and chairman of the board for Sciatica Incorporated, the local native corporation in Sitka. His company funded earlier studies by Avalon, both a public report prepared in 2012 for SEDA and an unrelated private report prepared for Sciatica. Cameron says he understands concerns about mining, including environmental ones.
These things can be done right. They should be done right. The questions that I have are, where are you going to find in this community jobs that pay $100,000 a year? What's the average salary in this community? Less than $50,000 a year.
Cameron said the impact of mining employment could bring big benefits to Sitka, but he also agreed with White's request to postpone the issue. It will next appear before the Assembly when all members can be present, either in person or by phone. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
A 22-year-old man spending his first summer in Ketchikan was badly injured the night of May 31st when he fell about 70 feet from a tree. Sean Rupi, in his early 20s, was attending a beach party with friends at Mountain Point. His close friend Travis Carter says a western hemlock tree nearby was an easy one to climb, and Rupi had been goofing off in the tree for a while. Carter says Rupi called out that he was coming down, and that's when his friend fell, landing on the back of his head. Rupi was taken to Ketchikan Medical Center and then was medevaced to Harborview Medical Center in Seattle. Rupi is recovering. Carter says his friend is moving his limbs and talking, but still has significant physical therapy ahead. Rupi had been working as a guide at Alaska Canopy Adventures, a popular summertime zipline tour. Carter has worked there for the past three seasons. Carter says it had rained the evening of the accident, so the tree likely was a little slippery. In addition, there had been some alcohol consumed before the accident. A group of scientists is calling on Congress to increase protection for 77 streams on Southeast Alaska's Tongass National Forest. The effort is called Tongass 77 and recommends more restrictive land use designations on nearly 2 million acres of productive watersheds. A panel representing the scientists held a conference on Monday. KFSK's Joe Vicknicki attended and filed this report.
The Coalition of Scientists is seeking what's called a Land Use Designation 2, or LUD 2, the most restrictive category on the Tongass besides a wilderness designation for the 77 fish streams. John Shane, a science advisor emeritus with Audubon Alaska, explained.
Our interest in the Land Use Designation 2, which was established in 1990, under the Tongass Timber Reform Act, is to allow a variety of uses, but particularly to protect these very important salmon-producing watersheds from roads and clear-cut logging that have potentially very long-term impacts on salmon. So we envision this protection not as a very strict wilderness designation, but a broader designation that really focuses on the conservation of fish and wildlife.
Audubon Alaska, Trout Unlimited, and the 230 individual scientists sent a letter to Congress seeking the change in land use. Jack Williams, senior scientist with Trout Unlimited, said the streams needed more than the 100-foot buffer strips allowed under existing federal management rules.
With the existing rainfall, steep slopes that a lot of these drainages have and experience, the 100 feet just isn't adequate to really protect these streams, especially if we have a timber harvest, road building, those kinds of things. So it's really this watershed scale approach that to protect these best remaining areas. It really does make the most sense.
The Coalition of Scientists identified the 77 streams as the most valuable unprotected watersheds on the forest. They argued that salmon should be the top priority for managing Tongass lands. Heather Hardcastle, a gill netter who works for Trout Unlimited, said the region had been the most lucrative area in the state for the past 2 years for salmon fishing. She said the health of salmon streams was an important part of that success.
We still have the opportunity in this region to safeguard those bread baskets, if you will, or those nurseries for our salmon. And it's been a real honor for me in the last 3 years to reach out to commercial fishermen like my family and begin to recognize that there really is a concern out there among all of us that we need to shore up this habitat.
The group said the 77 watersheds face threats from logging, road building, mining, climate change, hydroelectric development, and proposed land exchanges, and they hope the proposal will be picked up and supported by members of Congress. Wayne Owen, the director of Wildlife, Fisheries, and Watersheds for the U.S. Forest Service in Alaska, said the Tongass National Forest is currently reviewing its land management plan. He said the agency welcomes the interest and will take the Tongass 77 proposal into consideration.
The watersheds are in excellent condition. We feel as though there are adequate protections for salmon in all of those streams. That said, the land use designations for the various watersheds that are the Tongass 77 vary from essentially wilderness now to LUDs that are in active timber management.
Loss of timber management areas is not a popular idea with the timber industry. Owen Graham, executive director of the Alaska Forest Association, called the proposal unnecessary and said many of the watersheds listed had no development planned.
The buffer strips required on all streams, and the Forest Service manages even larger buffer strips than the law requires on many of the streams. Salmon populations have more than doubled since we started logging here 50, 60 years ago, so it's totally unnecessary, and what we really need to focus on is restoring a timber supply and timber jobs.
And one member of Alaska's congressional delegation has little interest in the Tongass 77 proposal. Congressman Don Young called it a fundraising tool and said it is, quote, hardly legitimate public policy with any chance of seeing the light of day in Congress while I'm here, unquote. Meanwhile, Alaska Senator Mark Begich said he's looking at the proposal and how it fits with another bill that would convey some Tongass lands to the Sea Alaska Regional Native Corporation.
Now, this one, their point is a good point, as you want to preserve some of these areas, these watersheds, for long-term benefit to our fisheries and to the habitat that's in that region. And so we're looking at it. We haven't made any decision on it, but we're now looking at it. As we know now, Sea Alaska's moving forward. So they've done a lot of work, and we're talking to them about, you know, is it 77? Is it 25? Is it 92? You know, I don't know exactly how they got to that number, but I know that's the watersheds they thought were the most at risk and should be protected. So we're now talking about how does this fit in with the Sea of Alaska and what does that do to your numbers? And
the 77 watersheds are scattered around southeast from Yakutat to the southern end of Prince of Wales Island. With help from Rosemary Alexander in Juneau. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
A state court judge is holding the Alaska Redistricting Board to its proposed timeline for redrawing the state's political boundaries. Under the schedule approved by the board last week, the panel plans to begin the process of drafting a new plan today with a goal of having a finalized plan by July 12th. Chairman John Torgerson said that timeline could slip by a day or so. Superior Court Judge Michael McConaughey on Tuesday found the board's time frame is similar to the one he had earlier proposed. But in a footnote to his order, he said violation of the deadline carries with it all the remedies available under the rules and common law. A change of command ceremony is planned this week for the Coast Guard's North Pacific Regional Fisheries Training Center. The Coast Guard says Lieutenant Steve Hulse will relieve Lieutenant Connor Sullivan as commanding officer during the ceremony Friday in Kodiak. Sullivan, who has commanded the center since July 2010, will be assigned aboard the Coast Guard cutter Bainbridge Island in New Jersey. Hulse takes over after completing graduate school at the University of Delaware, where the Coast Guard says he earned a master's degree in marine policy. Hulse graduated from the Coast Guard Academy in 2007 with a bachelor's degree in government. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or you'd like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. Now a quick look at Sitka Zone weather. It's currently 50 degrees downtown Sitka. Today expect areas of fog, decreasing clouds in the afternoon, highs 59 to 67. You are listening to KCAW in Sitka.